Hi and welcome to this week's Three Legs, Four Wheels F1 podcast. As usual, it's Paul here with...
Chris.
And Lee.
And we've got the Chinese Grand Prix to look at this week. Not the most thrilling race on track, if you're going to be honest. Everything major seemed to happen outside the circuit, shall we say, and in the press conference.
It did, yeah. Obviously, Rosberg and Hamilton are having another battle off circuit. Rosberg wasn't very happy about Hamilton going too slow in front of him, but you know, I don't see why he didn't speed up and attack Hamilton. But we'll come back to that later. We'll talk about the race first. As you said, wasn't the most exciting of races, was it? It's not going to live long in the memory of Formula One fans as far as the racing is concerned.
It threatened, didn't it?
It threatened to
pick up at some point.
There were tense moments where the Mercedes pair, who were out in front for a majority of the race, barring pit stops, looked like they may get caught again by Ferrari, by Sebastian Vettel, and at some point Kimi Raikkonen looked like he was going to come into the frame. But it just didn't happen. Nothing really happened. And Williams were quite happy to sit back a little bit from them. And then behind them, there was a bit of play swapping, a bit of driving going on. But nothing
major.
No, nothing that's going to make the season review.
No, I mean, don't forget, Maldonado was actually a victim this week.
Actually, he was, yeah. This is a good point.
He needs to really thank Jensen, because if it wasn't for Jensen, he'd have finished that race. And what would that do to his average?
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, he finished the race anyway, didn't he?
Brake issue.
Was it the same brake issue that made him forget to slow down when he was pulling into the pits?
I don't know. Yeah, that was odd, because he didn't have an issue until he came into the pits, and then he was pushing too hard. I don't know whether he blamed the brakes for that mini spin that he had, which got him stuck between the McLarens again, which then, of course, led on to the accident, which led to him spinning for a third time. Well, not spinning for a third time, but having a third incident in the race, which, inevitably, a couple of laps later, led to the end of his race. But, yeah, he was a victim. That's difficult for me to say. Yeah, Pastor Maldonado was a victim in this race, but... as a lot of the pundits on television had said, when he's good, he's very good, and when he's not, he's terrible.
Yeah, when he's good, he's good, and when he's not, he's usually in the wall.
Hang on now. He was very good once. On one day in Spain, he was very good.
On one day in Spain, he was very good 3 years ago.
He's got to be due another one or something.
Yeah, he can be good in qualifying.
Even the devil needs to service his boiler now and again.
No, but to be fair to Maldonado, he can be good in qualifying. When he's got the car underneath him, he can put in a decent single lap pace. Race pace, he does seem to struggle with a little bit more. Yeah. But Maldonado, do feel a little bit sorry for him, actually.
If you're going to feel sorry for anyone in this race, though, it has to be Max Verstappen.
Oh, he was having a belter, wasn't he?
He was having a brilliant race. Outside of the top, however many it was, six in the Williams, Ferrari, Mercedes, he was doing all of the work. We saw him overtaking... Yeah. Brilliantly overtaking as well. None of this sort of, you know, oh, I'll wait till, you know, wait to any opportune moment. And he was just, I'll be later on the brakes, but I'm not going to lock up. I'm going to turn the car in and I'm going to get round. I'm just going to make sure I'm passed, but I'll leave the other guy enough room.
That's not the way it's usually done by young drivers. And again, he's driving with the maturity of somebody that's 10 years older than he is.
Absolutely.
Well, as any listener that's already listened to us, and any new listeners that we've gathered, we've always said he was going to be good, didn't we?
Yes. Always.
Always, because that first podcast never really happened when we said he was too young.
Never said he was too young for Formula One and it was dangerous to put him in the car.
No, never.
No, we wouldn't say things like that. Shall I just delete the first episode from the internet history?
Yeah.
Maybe the second.
I mean, Williams managed to get both drivers in the top six this week, even though the pace wasn't actually as fast as some of the cars behind them. Watching the post-race coverage, it was mentioned that they were warned that Grosjean was actually going faster than both of them, but they managed to get both cars home ahead of the Lotus. So, whereas they're not winning on speed, they seem to be winning on strategy, and I think that's a good thing for them, because they know now that they're not going to be up there with the Ferrari team. But if they can actually get things right, they can be, as we keep saying, the best of the rest of the rest.
Yeah. Massa also mentioned as well after the race that he was talking about engine quality, and he seemed to hint that the difference between the Mercedes and Williams engines had sort of been equaled out since the last race.
Well, I think with the regulations, they're not allowed to have different engine specs.
No, but from the same engine software, isn't it?
But it, no, I suppose it is down to the software, and yeah. It's good to see that Williams are actually getting that sorted out. And I mean, I've been a Williams fan for years, and I'd like to see them. I'd like to see them back on top where they used to be.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm quite. I always used to watch Williams way back in the 90s when they were successful with Mansell and then Damon Hill following them, and then of course you had the years of Juan Pablo Montoya being at Williams. They were still relatively successful then, but they were the best Mercedes customer last year, whereas now it's looking as though race pace wise Lotus might actually be the best Mercedes customer.
I still think Williams will have them over a season,
probably, but you know, they've got to make sure that the updates that come in a couple of race time work. You know, they've really got to kick on from that.
Might be an interesting point as well. Now, seeing as I was speaking about Lotus, is talk about what a good job Julian Palmer did on his first practice. Apart from his first spin on his first lap, apart from that, he put some good laps in.
Yeah, he was only 0.6 seconds off. I think it was Maldonado, wasn't it?
Yeah.
In the other car in P1.
It's his first go in the car as well, wasn't it?
Yeah.
He hasn't had a go in it before.
So. Yeah, it's looking like he's going to fulfil the potential that he certainly showed when he was in GP2.
Yeah, I'd like to see him in a race seat, in a Lotus race seat next year, because I think there's a team that could do. I know we're constantly bashing Roman and Pastor for good reasons sometimes, for comedy value others, but I think that there's a team that really needs a consistent fast driver that's going to bring the car home every race and hopefully smash it into the points quite highly too.
Yeah, and hopefully Palmer can be that driver for them in the future.
Father jokes aside, he's a good driver. He's got a good background, because he has had a grounding in motorsport from day one, effectively. Yeah. And I think he should be able to do the job. And if Lotus can give him the car to do it, either next year or a couple of years down the line, it'd be interesting to see what he can do. But the stability angle, that is a very good point, because Lotus do need drivers that will get the car home.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the only way you get points.
Absolutely.
Who do you think would be the driver? Just quickly, I know we've got to move on to something else, but who do you think would be the driver on paper that you'd get rid of? Both drivers come with hefty sponsorship.
Pastor Maldonado.
First one where the money runs out, but Maldonado is going to be the he's going to be on, what is it they call it, on the bubble.
Mm.
Where are they going to be able to justify, yeah, okay, he brings in the money, but It's not looking good for the sponsors.
You've got to balance the books, haven't you? You can't just take into account, say he brings 30 million to the team, but he obviously gets paid a certain amount from the sponsorship money he brings in. So there'll be some sort of cut, because he's not there for nothing, is he?
No.
Then there's how much money do they lose from advertising? Through only having one car there for basically 50% of the race for X amount of races.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And how much it costs to keep fixing the bugger.
Yes, absolutely. Lots of spare parts that Lotus need to bring with them to every race.
Yeah. While we're on the subject of spare parts, McLaren, little progress step this week.
Yeah, they were pretty good actually. On the softer tyre, the option, they actually were not that far off top end pace. They kept pace with the rest of the field.
Yeah.
They put distance, but this sounds very sad to say now. They put distance between themselves and Manor, when you consider they were actually round about Manor's pace or slower at the beginning of the season.
Mm-hmm.
They put distance between themselves and Manor now. And they are hanging on to the tails of the rest of the field.
Got both cars home as well.
Got both cars home for the first time.
I did notice in the interviews after the race, Fernando looked very happy with the situation. Yeah, he was very upbeat.
It was a body language thing as well. I mean, you see drivers all the time say, "Oh yeah, you know, we're happy with this and we're happy with that." But Jensen and Fernando, whether it's their experience and media training that they've had for however many years, it was a body language thing that they weren't, you know, shoulders weren't dropped. They weren't just saying the words. Down. Yeah, but they weren't just saying the words. But
do you not think?
No, he was down, but I think he was also quite optimistically down, if you know what I mean. He expected a bit better. It didn't happen, but Fernando was quite buoyant about the result of getting both cars home.
Yeah, that's good to see. I mean, that could be a positive for McLaren moving forward for the rest of the season and for future seasons, because we have expressed doubts about how are things between Fernando and the team. It seems to be all right after this week.
It does. At the moment, it changes very quickly in Formula 1.
Well, Fernando changes very quickly as well, doesn't he?
He does.
But I think the completely opposite to you as far as the media stuff goes. I think what you're seeing from the drivers is a very media-savvy people that are used to it. I don't think Fernando can be happy.
Possibly not. It might have something to do with the fact as well that Ron Dennis is everywhere that McLaren are at the moment, and I don't mean that in the sense, you know, that he's the CEO and he is. I mean, he's making sure his face gets out there. He wants everyone to know that he is there, trying to kick ass basically at McLaren to make sure that this progress happens as soon as possible.
I wonder if it's a good thing.
I wonder if it's a good thing.
Because, I mean, for instance, we've all been in that situation where you're at work and you get that day with the boss where you're expected to be hyper-productive.
Yeah.
And having an authority figure there that essentially isn't doing anything. He's just standing there and looking at you.
Yeah, it can be counterproductive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't know what to think about the McLaren situation, because it's almost like if the drivers would turn around and say, yeah, things are pretty dire, well, we need this, we need that, I could accept it more, that maybe something's going to come. But when they just turn around and say, like, oh yeah, well, the chassis is really good, and then they're in the more demanding parts of the track which don't require a lot of horsepower, and they're still like down, you know, is that like a power delivery thing then? If that's the case, is that a power delivery thing where they like the power's coming in too sharp or something and spinning the rear tyres up?
Yeah, if you listen to the Honda engine, next time that they run an onboard footage on the McLaren, you can hear that the engine does something much different to the Renault and Mercedes engines and the Ferrari engines as well. When they're off the power, it's very smooth come down on the others. The others drop in rev very smoothly. Honda doesn't. The Honda cracks and burps and burbles and splutters. And it must be something to do with, obviously, they're still developing the engine, but that's a Honda thing purely. So you've got to look out for that. But Ron Dennis has said all along, reliability comes first, and they've got that. They've got the two cars home. Stability comes next, making sure that the drivers are confident enough to push a car.
But this is the thing I find funny, because this is the same.
And then performance comes last.
But this is the same Ron Dennis that back in Hakkinen time, when they had a good car, a fast car that was on the edge reliability wise sometimes, we would turn around and say, yeah, well, you've got to have a fast car, and then make it reliable.
Yeah, he's mellowed in his older age.
Well, he's completely gone against his own philosophy, essentially, saying that.
I think he's had to change with the way that Formula 1 has changed as well.
I think he's had to change it because his car's buggered.
Quite possibly.
That's one way of putting it. What wrong with teams getting two cars home, Manor?
Yeah, well done to Manor. I mean, I feel bad for them because we don't seem to see them on any of the world feed television coverage at all. Maybe that's because at the moment they're extremely short on sponsorship, or because nothing particularly happens with them. But yeah, both Roberto Meri and Will Stevens got the cars home. That weeks ago, this was completely unthinkable that Manor would be able to do this. We doubted as to whether or not they, when they didn't run Will Stevens' car last time out, you know, did they mean to run just the one car? Was it deliberate? But no, all credit to Manor. They've done a great job getting both cars home, and hopefully they can push on and start closing the gap to the rest of the field.
So on to the main talking point of the weekend. It's got to be Hamilton Rosberg Part 2. Game on, Nico.
Yeah, round two. The main action, as you say, was in the press conference. And Nico Rosberg seemed to be pretty upset that Lewis Hamilton was going too slow in front of him. But why he didn't attack, even though he's given an explanation for it, I still don't understand. No racing driver in the world would want the guy in front of them to be going any faster than they already were.
Well, there's that new meme that's come out today saying, I wish the guy in front of me would go faster, said no racing driver ever.
Absolutely. You know, there's nobody wants that to happen. I mean, everybody wants the person in front of you to be going slower if you're a racing driver. You know, he gave an excuse about tyres. I couldn't get close because then my tyres would go off. Something tells me if that was Lewis Hamilton in a reverse situation, he would have made that work.
But did you think it was funny? Like, I know he said that he wanted to be under less pressure from Vettel to consolidate his second place, and he had a half comment at the end saying because he didn't want to pit early so he could attack Lewis towards the end. That was his idea. But to me, it felt like he wanted to consolidate his second place.
But if he was going to be too close to Lewis and ruin his tyres,
then he'd have done it at the end of the race.
Yeah. But then when Vettel was getting close to him, wouldn't Vettel have ruined his tyres as well?
Well, yeah, Vettel did sort of say that, didn't he? He said that when I was getting a bit closer to Nico, I realised that my tyres weren't going to last as long, so I had to back off. And our favourite German journalist, Michael Schmidt, from Auto Motor Sport.
I like the fact we have a favourite German journalist.
We do, favourite German journalist. He asked a question of Sebastian right at the end of the press conference. Why is it different in China to anywhere else? And Sebastian said, it's not really. Gave a big long explanation and then finished it off with, it isn't really any different here to anywhere else.
Now, I thought, it's early in the season, but I think Nico is definitely showing the signs of being beaten.
Absolutely. I mean, you can't run with that mentality, because if you do, for Nico, the race is over as soon as you go into the first corner. Mm-hmm. Well, I can't attack him now because my tyres will die, and then... But looking at the facts, when Hamilton was given the hurry-up by the team, he hurried up, and before the safety car, had a five-second lead over Nico.
And the strange thing is that Rosberg asked the garage to tell Hamilton to speed up. So eventually, Hamilton drew the gap up eventually. And then in the meeting, he says, oh, yeah, but where did you find that pace from?
Yeah, but I mean, Lewis has got to look after his own tyres at the end of the day. Of course he's got to look after his own tyres. If that means perhaps, defending from the driver behind you who's trying to get past, then so be it. But Nico didn't bring the fight. At no point did he bring the fight, and he's blaming everyone else apart from himself. And it reeks of desperation, and almost to the point where he's saying, I'm not as good as Lewis Hamilton, I'm not as good as Sebastian Vettel.
Mm-hmm. Three races in, and he's given up on the season.
Yeah.
I mean, this can't be doing much good for the team, because having a driver that is already beaten and not going to be competitive, we could end up seeing two Ferraris on the podium. We could even see Ferrari pinching the Constructors' Championship.
We could see a Ferrari pinching the World Drivers' Championship if they don't get on top of everything. Yeah,
well, yeah.
If the team falls down around themselves,
it's destabilising the team. And Toto Wolff was very matter of fact, as you'd expect him to be after the race. Said, "What we need to do is look at what was agreed, whether anybody broke any team rules, whether anybody didn't listen to what they were told to do, and we'll take it from there." Nothing appears to have come of it, other than some sort of strange half-apology, half-explanation video that Nico Rosberg has posted himself today on social media.
But that was more a reply to Hamilton said that Nico was crying.
It wasn't actually Lewis Hamilton. Lewis Hamilton fan page.
Oh, was it?
Yeah,
oh,
okay. Under the guise of Lewis Hamilton. He's going to take a bit of a battering at times, but you know, Nico's got to take the opportunities that are presented to him, and I'm sure he will take an opportunity when it's presented to him. He's going to win a race before, you know, too long.
Yeah.
But when it happens, I'm not quite sure. But Lewis has an ability to make the best of a bad situation. If he finds himself behind, way down the field, like in Hungary last year, for example, started right at the back of the grid after his car caught fire in qualifying, and then managed to finish ahead of Nico Rosberg.
Yeah.
Nico Rosberg wouldn't have done that if that was Nico Rosberg this weekend.
No.
I've started at the back and just poodled around and maybe tried to make up a couple of places and do what he could.
He'd have done what the car could. Wherever that car would drag itself, he would end up very much in the same way as Felipe Massa used to do in Ferrari sometimes. Yeah. You know, he used to be where the car would take it.
He did manage to do it in Russia last year.
Yeah.
But this is a different Rosberg altogether. Yes, this is kind of complete. This is a deflated, out of ideas Nico Rosberg, who three races in, as you just said, Paul, has no idea how to turn the tide his way. Didn't know how to do it at the back end of last season. Hasn't come up with any fresh ideas that have worked this season, and he's out of steam already, and everything that he's doing is inflating Lewis Hamilton's ego. And Lewis Hamilton with a big ego is a successful Lewis Hamilton.
Well, you say about destabilising the team, do you think there's a chance that Nico, who is already tied into a multi-year deal that he's in his first year of, it's not been disclosed how long he's going to be there for, but usually when they say multi-year deal, it's usually 5 years,
yeah,
isn't it?
4 or 5 years normally, yeah.
So, do you think he realises he's signed a contract for a team that it's not going to work for him? So he's causing this friction because two things can come of it. Ideal situation for Nico Rosberg is that his contract is so ironclad that they can't get rid of him, and they decide not to retain Lewis Hamilton, which isn't going to happen.
That can't happen because, I mean, at the moment, he is the best guy on track in the best car.
Yeah, and it's not just that. It's even if he was, let's just say Lewis and Nico were on level pegging, you know, as far as drivers go.
Yeah,
but the situation was the same. He's far more marketable to Mercedes than a Nico Rosberg is.
He's a more marketable sports person.
Mm. Well, globally.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. More people recognise the name Lewis Hamilton than they do Nico Rosberg, outside of, you know, Formula One fans.
Yeah.
People may well know who he is, but, I mean, Lewis Hamilton is, especially in the UK, is a household name.
He's a brand.
Yeah, of course he is, yeah.
Or, on the other side of it, if things are going to keep going as they are, does Nico Rosberg, right, deep down his heart, think, I don't want to be here now. I don't want to be in this team with this man. I'm tied into a deal. I don't want to leave the deal because it's obviously a very lucrative deal. So I have to make the appearance that we cannot coexist in a team together, which means that Mercedes would have to essentially do a Kimi Raikkonen on him to get rid of him.
Is he screaming to make his position untenable, basically?
I'll tell you what, I bet Fernando Alonso's manager is sniffing around the Mercedes paddock.
It's possible.
It's Formula One. Anything can happen.
There wouldn't be
and it usually does.
Yay!
But thanks, Murray.
Wouldn't it be amazing, though, if Lewis Hamilton and Nico Rosberg don't get on, they hate each other, they're causing arguments. Let's bring Fernando Alonso in. That'll fix everything.
Well, who should we bring in to partner Lewis Hamilton? Fernando Alonso, yeah. Yeah. They went really well last time. Teammates. I think the Alonso to Mercedes rumours were to cover off before Lewis was offered the new contract.
Yeah.
He's just stalling for some reason on signing a new contract, not sure why. But
it's got to be about money, hasn't it?
It has to be about money, but I mean, you touched on it in a previous podcast, I think it was last week's podcast actually, Lee, where you said about, you know, does this devalue Rosberg's commitment to the team, when he said, well, we think this guy's worth this much money.
Of course it does.
We tied you into a multi-year deal, but we think this man is worth this much.
I'd be surprised if Rosberg was on $10 million a year.
He probably is. He's probably more than that, I would say. But I wouldn't.
So.
I wouldn't expect him to be on the astronomical amount that we discussed last week.
I mean, Fernando Alonso? He's on $30 million, isn't he?
I don't know. I've no idea.
So something like that. Jensen Button's on $8 million.
That's ridiculous. He has taken a massive pay cut. Yeah. I do know that. Yeah.
But I think he was on ten or twelve before that. So I wouldn't have thought Nico Rosberg would be on much more than him.
So yeah, it's an interesting battle that's gonna rumble on. And I mean, if anything happens in Bahrain this year, like it did last year, race wise, it's gonna ramp the tension right up, because they were still friends when they had that really close battle in Bahrain last year.
Yeah, it only fell apart in Monaco, really, didn't it?
It did. Cracks started to show with that qualifying lap in Monaco, which, when you look back at it now, from what we're seeing from Rosberg, now starting to look deliberate.
I thought it was deliberate when it happened.
Yeah, it's possible, but we'll see. It's
too neat and tidy. You don't crash that neat.
No, I mean, it happened in Belgium last year. They came together, and then it was all sour for quite some time after that. It's happened already this year, and we're only three races in. It's going to happen again, I think, before the season's out.
Now, talking of blow-ups, Renault engines.
Renault engines, of course, yeah. Two, I believe they had in China.
Yeah.
Max Verstappen, very unfortunate, as we've already touched on.
Spectacular as well, wasn't it?
It was. It locked up the back wheels on the main straight and pulled out the safety car for the last few laps of the race, which was a bit of an anti-climax, of course. But and the Red Bull of Danny Kvyat.
Which, as he put it, car's on fire.
Yeah.
It was the most laid back, oh, I'm on fire, guys, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, Danny Kvyat appears to have inherited Mark Webber's Red Bull, doesn't he? He's having all of the bad luck at the moment. He had a brake failure. Was it during practice or qualifying?
It was in practice.
He had a brake failure and overcooked it going into the hairpin with no brakes and very slowly hit a wall. And then his engine goes bang. But Red Bull, if you remember, were threatening to quit the sport just before the race. They came out and said, oh, we were only threatening that to make sure that Renault were up to their game. And then this happens.
It's not the best situation for Renault at the moment.
No, they're looking fairly...
mediocre at best.
Stupid.
Well, yeah.
Not broken. It's not mediocre, it's clean broken.
Yeah, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
I mean, we're seeing engines go up 90s style.
Which we shouldn't be seeing with the technology that we've got today. I mean, gone are the days of this time last year when you could say, oh, it's new technology, we're still getting used to it, we don't know what's going on.
It's still pretty new,
but we see more blow-ups this year than we were last year.
Don't forget when you used to have all the spectacular blow-ups years ago with, like, the Stewart and the stuff like that. Think of the amount of testing they had then. We haven't got any of that now.
Yeah, quite right. And also the limit of engines. What was it? Red Bull have gone through four engines already.
Four engines out of the allowed eight.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. They're halfway along. They're going to have engine penalties.
Oh, well, they've more or less admitted we're going to have engine penalties. And Christian Horner said, we are just going to have to do what we can to minimise the amount of penalties that we get, because we know that they're going to happen.
I think this is going to be the end of the engine penalty real soon. Because
it is going to get to the point where you're going to destroy
the championship.
It's going to render qualifying pointless, because you will have the Mercedes cars unpenalised because they appear to have the reliable engine.
Yeah,
and then everybody else. Based in the order that their engines gave out, might have to replace a part.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, there are some of the engines that go bang are salvageable. But they, I understand, are FIA seals on parts of the engine, and if they go bang and the seal gets broken, it's gone.
Once it's done, it's done.
You cannot use that part of the unit once it's gone. And it's at the moment, it's because you have various failures on different parts of the power unit. These failures with Renaults are the actual internal combustion engine unit, the ICE, as they call it. It's where all the moving mechanical parts are, and if
that's the one that's going, that's the one that actually gets the harshest penalties for going over the limit.
Yeah,
that's the ten placer.
It is, absolutely, straight away, boom. As soon as you've used your allocation, it's tough.
This is the problem, isn't it? I really don't like all the engine things that are going on in Formula One at the minute, because every car is supposed to be a prototype. You know, Formula One is supposed to be the pinnacle of motorsport, and all the engine freezing and stuff. You can only change so many things. You get tokens, and which we've already touched on on the podcast. And now drivers are going to start getting penalised. But literally, by halfway through the season, you're going to start seeing probably all Renault engine cars on penalties race after race after race.
Yeah,
McLaren, I shouldn't imagine, will be too far behind that. With their engine, because they keep their losing engines at a reasonably rapid rate.
Yeah,
I think of the top guys, the only guy not to lose an engine so far is Nico. everyone else has had one.
I think you're right, yeah.
Yeah, we're not even a quarter of the way through the season, and people are into the second quarter of the season's engines already, or in Red Bull's case, yeah, the second half.
See, that's the other thing you say, is it's not new technology, and it's the second year we've had it, but it's, to use a gamery term, they've tried the stuff out now, and they're overclocking it.
Yeah.
You know, it's
time to turn the juice up and see how fast they can go, and that's when things are going wrong.
Now, Bernie Eccleston, he's been fairly quiet this season, up till this weekend.
Yeah, he's come out and said stuff about the engine rules again. At the moment, he's very unhappy with the stalling and the meetings between the engine manufacturers, and when to bring in the next set of new rules. Basically, he's accused Toto Wolff of deliberately stalling, because Mercedes are obviously finding this particular era very lucrative and very successful for them, and he even went as far as to say that Toto Wolff would have on his headstone, "I killed Formula One."
Well, not contentious at all.
No, not at all. But he's what he did say, which I think will reach out to a lot of fans, which is rare for something that Bernie Eccleston has said, is that it's not an engineer's championship. It's not even necessarily a manufacturer's championship. We've got to get back on the side of the driver's championship, and the only way you'll have a driver's championship is if all the engines are equal. But then what's the point of having
more than one engine manufacturer in the sport? You're turning it into
Formula Palmer Audi.
I was going to say Formula Renault or a one engine series, which, to be honest, if, and as we, and as everyone says, this is the pinnacle of motorsport, let the manufacturers show what they can do, but put the best drivers in the cars.
Absolutely, yes.
So I don't think Bernie takes the threat of the World Endurance Championship seriously enough. All that would need is the fabled sports car championship where they were talking about where you just take the prototype cars, essentially, and whack them on a grid and have a Formula One style weekend.
Yeah.
And that would be a very popular sport.
Yeah, I mean, World Endurance Championship, it is growing in popularity, including, you know, they have the power to change.
Yeah.
They've now got the power to change parts of the course due to the nature of the cars. Mark Webber, actually, at Silverstone this weekend, decided that, I think he spearheaded the campaign of the drivers to flatten out the curbs on the Becketts and Maggots section of the circuit. Because for those cars, they ride too low, and it throws the car off balance when they go over the curbs. So it's not using the track limit, exceeding the track limits. It's using them to the best of your advantage. And they got them lowered, which divided opinion. I could see why some people wanted it happened, and I could see why a lot of people didn't want it to happen. But that's a very serious threat to Formula One. But what you've got to have is a sport that's accessible to the general public.
That's the only thing that it goes against World Endurance Championship at the minute, is the fact that it's a very difficult sport to watch. No, you've got to put aside 24 hours in one case to watch it. But see, the thing with it is, I think Bernie wants Formula One to be football, essentially. That's the way he's looking at it now. He wants it to be this super accessible sport that millions and millions and millions of people can watch. And it doesn't get confusing. You can sit down, you can watch any football match, and it's the same. You know, it's just the same sport. But the problem for Formula One is, in his eyes, it's far too complicated for that. It can never be that.
Well, that's his fault.
Yeah, no, yeah, I'm not saying it's a bad thing.
He's made it what it is. And also, the thing with football is, it's easy to play yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't just start motor racing.
No.
Unless you're a spectator at the Chinese Grand Prix.
Well, yes.
In which case you just run across a track and ask the Ferrari team if you could have a go in one of their cars. That's a bit too accessible, I think.
But no, I mean, from what...
I'm surprised Fernando didn't get in trouble for that.
Oh, dear.
But no, from what you were saying before, Lee, about Bernie and Martin on the grid, if you want to sort of elaborate on what you were talking about before we started recording.
Yeah, he turned around and said that he thought the commentators confused Formula One and confused the general public that watch Formula One by making Formula One more complicated than it has to be. I mean, fair enough, obviously, where I'd say the likes of us three, anyone that's listened to this podcast, the type of people that go, like, every day I've got a separate folder in my web browser that's just F1, and it's got like my favourite websites on, and I read them in the morning while I'm having a cup of coffee before I find out what's going on in the real world about things. Now, so maybe I'm slightly different, but I found that so condescending as a Formula One fan that he could turn around and say, oh, well, you know, maybe he wanted it to be like that, the CBeebies coverage that they used to have for a while, where we just talked about the Ferraris were red cars and the McLarens were black and silver cars.
Yeah, I mean, that is condescending, but for somebody new who starts watching Formula One, it can be a little bit sort of, oh, I don't really understand why they're doing, like, why are they doing this, why are they doing that. But it's the same with a lot of sports that you get interested in. At the end of the day, you have to make it a spectacle, and there's a fine line between making the sport a spectacle and messing around with it to the point where it is so complicated that nobody understands it. I mean, anybody, as you said, quite rightfully said, anyone who's listened to this, any fans of Formula One, or anyone who's listened to this for the first time, if you're a subscriber, I'm guessing that you're well into your Formula One, and if you're a driver as well, you're going to understand it all. But the general public outside of the motorsport world and fans need to be able to get into Formula One.
Do they?
Easier. Yeah, I think they do. But not everyone can like everything. No, you're quite right. But not through dumbing down of commentary. This is the thing. Bernie Ecclestone is his own enemy here. He's created a problem himself, mm-hmm. and then blamed everybody else for it.
Yeah.
Which is not the best way to go about it.
Do you think the problem is that Bernie Ecclestone...
You mean like Nico Rosberg?
Yes. Created a problem of his own doing and then blamed everybody else for it.
Do you think the problem is that he doesn't like Formula One anymore? He doesn't watch the races anymore. He doesn't like racing. He likes business and he likes money, and that's what he's interested
in. Yeah, I think he's starting to look to the point where he's not going to be around anymore, because he knows he's not going to live forever unless he's got some sort of secret plan, which we don't know about, which involves him being a Futurama head rest of eternity.
Seems to be doing well at the minute, doesn't he?
Yeah. But, you know, when that time comes for him to step down or step aside, we'll see. You know, what happens then?
I think his step down when he leaves Formula One will literally have to be a step down about 6 feet of them.
Ooh.
And finally, I think we move on to a preview of Bahrain, which, well, there's not a great deal to preview because it's the flying straight from China to Bahrain. There's going to be no developments on the cars. It's going to be China Part 2.
Yeah, you get this with back-to-back races sometimes, especially in the early and the late part of the season when they're the flyaway races. It's difficult for teams to bring upgrades. They don't bring upgrades in between China and Bahrain, or they won't be this year anyway, because they have a lot of updates waiting and a lot of extra staff on standby for the European leg of the season, which starts after the three-week break
after Bahrain, yeah. Barcelona.
So yeah, there's not an awful lot to say about Bahrain. I mean, it did give us a great race last year, as we've already touched on. It might not be as more of the same or pedestrian as we're thinking it might be in relation to how the Chinese Grand Prix went, but yeah, it's a case of just setting up the car right. It's the same car that left China, it will be the same car that starts in Bahrain, and that's the same for everyone.
Yeah, although I'm expecting to see Toro Rosso's in the points this time.
I would hope so. I want to see a bit more luck swing Max Verstappen's way. He was unlucky with his retirement. We already touched on that. But and I want to see Kimi Raikkonen able to push a bit harder. You know, he did push in China, but as we said,
not quite enough. But
no, it didn't materialise, which was a shame.
He's good round Bahrain, though, isn't he, Kimi? Yeah, you know, he hasn't won, has he?
I don't think he's won. He was running second, wasn't he, in Lotus? Yeah. And then his tyres gave up on him with like a lap to go, and he ended up like 17th or something ridiculous like that. So yeah, I mean, it is quite a punishable track on tyres, or it was in the daytime heat anyway. They've gone for the same tyre range in Bahrain as they had in China.
Yeah, so it's going to be a night race. So it's going to track temperature is going to be a lot cooler.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this is why they're running the same tyres as they were in China.
Mm-hmm.
And I just... I'm hoping for a more interesting race, but I'm not holding out too much hope.
Yeah, I mean, because the Chinese race, as we already said, it wasn't that great. You know, it threatened, as you said, Lee, it did threaten to, yeah, to be a good race, threatened to have points of brilliance, but they never came about. Whereas Bahrain is the circuit, I don't know what it is about the circuit. You know, since they changed the layout, it was, you know, they've made it more of a driver's circuit. And
It'll suit Lewis, and I think we'll see another Hamilton victory.
I think so. I think we'll see another Mercedes 1-2. Interesting that the first three races, the three drivers that have been on the podium have been the same for the first three races, for the first time in history in the sport.
Yeah, it's about the most interesting thing you can say about that so far, because the season's going as we predicted.
It is. We know that Ferrari are the closest to Mercedes. The gap will be similar, I think, in Bahrain to how it was in China.
Uh-huh.
I think the gap will be slightly closer with the Ferraris. I think they'll close a little bit, but nothing major. I think, but it's just going to end up being a vehicle to make Lewis Hamilton and Nico Rosberg come together essentially again. It could be very interesting.
It's possible, yeah. And you've also got to think of the idea that before China, some teams may have set up more for Bahrain than they had for China.
That's a possibility.
It is a possibility. So you're quite right. Ferrari may be closer, but I expect the gap to be similar.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's about covered everything for this week. But before we go, I want to thank everyone for listening. And last week's podcast, as we put on the website, has been the most successful one so far. We're up to about 140 listens from last week's one. So I'll personally thank you all, but it will take slightly too long. And also, you can now find us on Stitcher, which this will be the first episode going out on there. So if you have that app, look for us on there. Tell your friends. Share it around. And we'll be back next week with the review of Bahrain, and looking forward to what developments are coming through for Barcelona.
Yeah, I'm sure there'll be plenty to talk about after Bahrain, especially the fallout of Rosberg Hamilton round two.
And of course, one thing we want to say before we go is keep fighting, Jules.
Absolutely, keep going.
And we'll see you next week.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.